Hello everybody, this is Steven Dutzman. I am the founder of EngageFamilyGaming.com, and this is more or less my ride to work. Specifically, I'm driving home from Dunkin' Donuts because today is work from home day, because there is no work for the rest of the week. For those of you that maybe perhaps are not in North America, it is American Thanksgiving tomorrow. So I will be not commuting to work either tomorrow or Friday because I actually am very gifted and blessed to have the day off. But even though I'm working from home today, I really didn't want to, I didn't want to not record something because today is a very big day. Not only is it like the day before Thanksgiving, which is kind of huge, right? It is also, I'm not even going to bury the lead. Today's the 20th anniversary of the North American release of The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time on the Nintendo 64. And, man, is it a big deal? You know, that I have a lot of great memories in that game. So does my wife. And honestly, it's also my son Evan's, you know, it's one of his favorite games as well. And so I wanted to kind of talk about it because it was revolutionary when it came out. And, you know, a lot of people don't really think about it. But it's a very important game for Nintendo. I think one of the important things to remember when we think about, like, the context of how important that game was, it's that Nintendo was failing. At that point, the Nintendo 64 was struggling, and they had enjoyed a lot of success on the Super Nintendo, which was the console beforehand, and, you know, with the NES before that. They had enjoyed success in the role-playing game market as a result of their strong relationship with Square, right? Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, etc. That relationship dried up when Square jumped ship and brought Final Fantasy VII over to the PlayStation, to the PlayStation 1, which was competition for the Nintendo 64. So, like a whole, like, pillar of the Nintendo catalog just vanished, right? Like, these RPGs just were gone. And so, Nintendo was actually marketing and really pushing Zelda as an immersive role-playing game experience. Now, we don't necessarily think of it that way anymore. You know, now we think of Zelda, most people think of Zelda as like an action-adventure game. But then, they were pushing it as a role-playing experience. And it was, this was the test of everyone's expectations, right? So when the Nintendo 64 launched, it launched with Super Mario 64, which, you know, many consider to be the best Mario game of all time. I don't, but, you know, many people do. But at the time, it was insane because the ability to run around in a 3D space was just completely unheard of. A lot of folks who, especially folks who were, you know, interested in Zelda, for me, I thought about it too. It's like the first time I saw it, I really enjoyed my time with Mario, but I also really wanted to see what would happen if they used those tools to make Zelda. Now, fun story, you know, I thought that, right? Like, I can't wait that they just build Zelda in that world. More or less, they did use the Super Mario 64 engine to help build the Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. It was, you know, as it was later revealed. But they added so many, like, custom pieces to it that it was almost unrecognizable. But, like, they started with that framework, which I think is really interesting. One of the biggest things they did is they changed the camera. Mario, the camera was really all about him, right? And making sure that you saw him. Whereas in Zelda, it was really about making sure that you could kind of see the world around you. And so they pushed out this game. Now, the first thing that people saw of this game was like a tech demo that was just Zelda, or not Zelda, that was Link. See, even I do this, that make that mistake sometimes. It was Link fighting like a skeleton warrior. The models don't look the same. It was obviously rough, but it definitely gave it really helped to show what they were going for. It also showed that, one of its obvious influences was Legend of Zelda 2, which featured, like, blocking and, like, more detailed combat, right? So it wasn't necessarily just about timing. You had to block at the right time and, deal with enemies. So it really kind of showed that off. And it also demonstrated, some of the power that the Nintendo 64 had and what they were going to do as far as, lighting and shading and, textures on the enemies and things like that. Really did a great job of showcasing, like, what the game could look like, even if it didn't showcase what it did look like. And if you want to know, if you want to see some of that footage, you should be able to find it on YouTube. If you just look up Ocarina of Time premiere footage, it was actually at Space, what was the name of, I think it was Space World in Disney World, which is I'm probably getting the name wrong, but it was when Nintendo sponsored something at Disney World where you could go and play video games. They debuted it there. They kind of had their own little press conference type thing, and they debuted the footage there. But, eventually the game came out, and they, obviously it sold incredibly well, was critically well received, it's viewed as a masterpiece. So my story with this game is that I played it and got like halfway through and then I put it down. Something just didn't grab me and like right away, right? Which surprises me, right? Breath of the Wild grabbed me right by the back of the scruff of the neck and made me get to work, right? Like, I just wanted to play that game and I couldn't stop. But, Ocarina of Time, I played it and I got about halfway through it and then I stopped. Meanwhile, my brother just absolutely just devoured the game. It wasn't until actually a couple years later where I went back and decided to restart it. And, I was living with my wife at the time and it clicked with me then. It was really interesting that, maybe I just wasn't in the right headspace for that game at the time, I'm not sure. But, some of my fondest memories of that game were when I decided to just kind of wander around the Hyrule Field and, like, really kind of understand how big the game was at the time. And I was just kind of really dissecting every area in it. There were a lot of empty spaces because that's just how the game worked. But I was really dissecting everything that I could because I wanted to try and get all the secrets. I was trying to not use a strategy guide. So I was really just kind of methodically, going around and searching for secrets, etc. And I'll just never forget, some of those like neat discoveries and some of the cool views that I found. I will admit I got frustrated in the water temple just like everybody else does. But I kind of don't, but it frustrated me kind of the same way that most other, frustrated me in the same way that most dungeons do. Which I think might be one of the reasons why I really liked Breath of the Wild so much, because my favorite part is actually not always the dungeons. I like a lot of the open world stuff. What happens with me with dungeons is I get in and I get kind of scrambled up. Eventually I reach a breaking point where I basically have to like start the dungeon over and like go back to the beginning and like slowly, and methodically take it one turn at a time, one room at a time. And because I find myself just getting impatient in my beginning playthrough and just kind of pushing forward, and inevitably I miss a detail. I don't look up. I don't look behind me. You know how that stuff goes. And so the water temple, you know, I know that it is kind of hated by a lot of folks. It actually really didn't bother me the same way that I know other people did. And I think maybe it's just because I play JRPGs and I'm used to kind of tedious stuff. The idea of having to go into menus and change the boots and do all this stuff really didn't hit me that hard. I mean, it was a thing, but what are you going to do? Just thinking back on it, you know, those are some of those I don't really even remember getting angry with the water temple. I know a lot of people did, and I'm sure, you know, folks are going to have comments and stuff. At no point in that game, outside of the first time I played it, where I didn't get angry and frustrated and stuff, but it just kind of didn't grab me. But my second playthrough, I really did just kind of devour that game. It just was so creative, right? Like, the first time I went into, like, Jabu Jabu's belly, you know, and, like, had a dungeon inside of a whale. And, you know, just all sorts of interesting, it was so just groundbreaking. And I remember looking at it and being like, there's no way video games are ever going to look any better than this. You know, which is my, And I think that's me being a victim of my own hype, right? Like, I'm always thinking, you know, oh my goodness, this is as good as it gets. But I think at this point I've learned that that's just not the truth. But man, like, I just was convinced that this is as good as it's going to be. Whereas now it looks kind of archaic. So this is my wife's favorite game of all time. And she played through all of it on the Nintendo 64, but promptly forgot a lot of the details because she just, you know, she doesn't really retain a lot of that stuff. And so when it came out on 3DS, she was like, nope, I'm going to play it again. Which, I mean, of course, right? Like, who am I to say, no, you can't replay a game? So she played through it, and actually she played through it around the same time that Evan did. And the two of them played through... And, you know, she devoured it. There were a few points where just kind of the weirdness of the 3DS controls, she actually needed a little bit of help. But, you know, it's amazing to the fact that, you know, it was, what, 2017 when that happened? No, 2016 probably, when the 3DS version came out. And she... You know, like, that game at that point was 15 years old-ish, right? Like, it was not a young game. And it still held up. It's still fun. The combat is still neat. Like, that backflip, when you're Z-targeting an enemy, and you do the backflip, it just feels awesome. You know, what I love, like, these are just some of my memories and some of the things that are kind of hitting me. This is what I would like. Number one, at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time tonight, we actually have a special guest who will be live streaming on the EFG Facebook page. Her name is Susie. She is a super fan, an EFG super fan, but also she is a Legend of Zelda super fan. And she also happens to be a professional musician. And she will be playing piano. She will be performing pieces from the Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time soundtrack, and I'm very excited to have her there, so please either tune into that or watch it on demand afterwards. And you know, and otherwise I'm going to be sharing this in the Engage Family Gaming group, and that's Engage Family Gaming /community. I'd love you to go there, grab that post, and leave a comment with, like, your favorite memory of Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, because, I mean, at this point, this game has touched a lot of lives, it's super important, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. So, I am home, I'm gonna go on in, and, it is a work-from-home day, so I'm gonna get to work. So you guys, I hope you do have a great day. Hopefully I will see some of you tonight. I hope you have a great holiday if you are in, North America. And we will see you, on Monday. And don't forget this weekend to get your family game on. We'll see you soon. Bye.